now. The treaty is signed. What does this mean for these 122 countries and for the world?
So the next process is going to be signing on to the treaty. It'll open for signature at the UN in New York on the 20th of September. And after that, they'll have to go through a national ratification process in order for it to enter into force. But that should all happen within the next year or two. And then it will be international law that is binding on all of the countries that have adhered to it, which means in some cases, they're going to have to change their practices and policies that may enable or facilitate the use or the possession of nuclear weapons.
In what way?
So there could be economic divestment, for example, from nuclear weapon producing companies. There could be changes of national law that currently permit transit of nuclear weapons through territorial waters. There could be different shifts in policies and practices around military training exercises that currently involve the preparation to use nuclear weapons. And it'll also be an iterative process of building up the stigmatization and the norm against nuclear weapons through the public policy, through parliaments, and through national discourse.
Well, I want to thank you, Ray Acheson, Director of Reaching Critical Will, the disarmament program of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Also represents Wilf on the steering committee of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. That does it for our show. To see transcripts of the show or video or audio podcasts, go to democracynow.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineers, Paul Huckabee as well. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale. Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasures to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for your community radio station, KBOO. Bring them to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Friday, August 11th. Please, no home-recorded cassettes, VHS tapes, or mold. The KBOO Book and Record Sale will be held on Saturday, August 19th. If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email Ani at volunteer@kboo.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO.
Up to be somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good and mom. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
What a bear. What a bear.
It's a family affair. Yes, sirree. It's a family soap opera reality show. What the heck is going on? This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Yeah, I'm your host, Paul Rowland. We may be talking about that family affair that you heard all about on Democracy Now! If you're listening to that, and kind of hard to avoid if you're tuned in to some device or another that's talking about this insane situation going on here in the United States of America, which, as we know, ought to be involved in things like global warming, which is creating massive dislocations like the Larsen Sea ice shelf. Everybody hear that? Just broke off there, down there in Antarctica. Size of Delaware. That's going to be now, who knows where it's going to go. Anyway, yeah, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland, and kind of an open show today. I had some things I wanted to talk about, and then just so much stuff happening. Maybe there's things you want to talk about. 503-231-8187, Larsen Sea Ice Shelf. There's this article that many of you have probably seen reference to. Maybe some of you have read all the way through. It's long. The Uninhabitable Earth came out in The Atlantic. Or no, New York Magazine. I'm sorry, New York Magazine. Famine, economic collapse, a sun that cooks us. What climate change could wreak sooner than you think? By David Wallace Wells. Came out just a few days ago, July 9th. And a flurry of responses. Are we as doomed as that New York Magazine article says? The models are too. And then a number of follow-ups. As or perhaps more interesting than the article itself that David Wallace Wells put out on their website, based on the interviews he did for that article, the models are too conservative. Paleontologist Peter Ward on what past mass extinctions can teach us about climate change today. And of course, Michael Mann, the renowned climatologist from is it Penn State or University of Pennsylvania? One or the other. He criticized the article, saying it was a couple factual things that were not accurate in it, which may or may not be true. Anyway, so that's one series of things. Then, of course, my neighborhood of Montevilla, people might have heard that there was a contentious meeting a couple nights ago about their resolution opposing police sweeps of homeless campers in the Montevilla neighborhood. It's a packed room, probably the most attended Montevilla Neighborhood Association meeting ever, perhaps. I don't know, because that's the first one I've actually attended since I've been living in that area for a couple years. It's a kind of a transition zone. It's a entering the realm of gentrification, since it's kind of spilling out into that area. All of Portland is being affected. A lot of people have been already pushed into that area from gentrification and more even further past 205. The neighborhood goes out to 205 between 84, Highway 84 and Division and Mount Tabor and 205 more or less. I'm kind of in a between 82nd and 205, very much of a transition area. Historically more a part of East Portland. Now, becoming more a part of the high rent, high turnover area. Lots of houses being sold, being bought, being renovated in that area. Along the bicycle path there, along 205, a lot of people are camping. A lot of other areas, there's people camping out. It's created a lot of contention, as I said, in the neighborhood. Just a few weeks ago, the neighborhood association passed a resolution opposing the police sweeps. A number of residents are upset that there wasn't really a lot of debate prior to the resolution. They didn't feel like they were really involved. There was somehow the word got out that there's going to be some sort of, right-wing disruption of the event. I don't know what that was based upon. There didn't seem to be that. There's a number of people from outside the neighborhood there supporting the homeless population, supporting the resolution. The agenda sort of was opened up to include a makeshift debate that wasn't really all that exhaustive, inclusive. There's going to be a forum coming up on the 29th involving houseless people and houseless advocates to talk about the issue. A lot of people wanted to have a more of an inclusive debate in the community. That doesn't seem like that's going to happen. It's going to be in a same place, the Montevilla United Methodist Church, which only has a capacity of 120 people. They're going to actually have tickets for it. So that's happening in Portland, which is kind of a microcosm of the entire city and what's happening in terms of skyrocketing rents, people being forced out of their houses, many people forced into homeless, a lot of economic and climate refugees moving to Portland because of what's going on a broader basis around the country. Portland's climate is definitely more amenable to living in than certainly the Southwest, where we have a massive heat wave going on, record-breaking heat in Southern California, fire season happening early and big, perhaps a sign of things to come for the rest of the summer. So much is happening, and it seems to be all related. In the midst of that, as I started out, there's this bizarre Trump family reality show where the whole seems to be turning out to be true, that there really was a Russia involvement, and Donald Jr. seems to have really stepped in it. Do we really know what's going on? Will Trump last? A lot of people seem to be sort of putting their hopes on that. I don't know if that's a good thing, because of course, the reality of the political situation in this country is way deeper than just Donald Trump. The voter suppression still seems to be almost the major thing going on. The Russian involvement, to what extent there was, seems to have had some impact, but voter suppression was way more of an issue. And the fact that the Democrats have never really, as a party, taken a major stand on that issue. So I know I'm going all over the place. I don't know. What do you all want to talk about? 503-231-8187. How do you pull all this stuff together? How do you see climate change and gentrification and houselessness and Trump and the dismal state of politics and white supremacy? There's another thing. I attended the free speech, so-called free speech rally a couple weeks ago in Portland, just before I took off out of town. By the way, if you tuned in last week, I apologize. There was some just a little bit of a snafu there on getting a substitute for last week's show. I apologize for there not being a live Wednesday talk radio last Wednesday. These things happen. And the free speech rally, I went there and it was kind of a bizarre sight. There's, 50 to 75 maybe people on the so-called alt-right side. A number of really scary dudes, I gotta say. The tiny, the Samoan guy is a very intimidating fellow. Sort of scared me when I went up to him and I questioned him as to his Samoan war dance, whether that's how that's looked on by the Samoan community. Bristled at that and became very angry. And person you don't want to get angry. That's just one thing. Then you had the Proud Boys, these most of them kind of large, burly white dudes with these kind of odd sort of uniforms. I don't know. I've heard that they have some strange sort of initiation practices and beliefs. They believe in Western chauvinism. They're proud of it. I think a code word for white supremacy is it's a one way of looking at that for sure. So I got to talk to some of them. And then on the other side, there's 50 to 100 of them and 50 to 100 of the Antifa side and associated people there to protest. And it turned out to be this sort of roving skirmish with the police not in view. I understand that's something that's happening, not just in Portland, that the police are sort of either coming in when you have a large presence, like happened a couple weeks before that, where you had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of counter-protesters when they had their alt-right rally at Terry Shrunk Park, and the police showed up in force as a barrier between facing out from Terry Shrunk towards the self-proclaimed anti-fascist protesters. I say self-proclaimed just because I don't know why. I think it is a fascist movement, the alt-right. I just think there's a lot of complexities to it that don't get gone into enough. But afterwards, the police then shook down the about 150 apparently counter protesters and photoed their IDs. And Police Chief Marshman denied that initially. So I was there and saw that, and then I went to this other one a couple weeks later, as I say, and it was very different. There was no police visibly present. And there is actually some very dangerous situations where I don't know exactly how it all transpired, but there's sort of a running skirmish between the two sides, and occasionally people mixed it up, and there's two or three minor injuries. I don't think anybody was. If anybody was there, please call and tell me your take on it. But somebody could have been seriously hurt. Ironically, the three percenters, militia people, who one of whom apparently helped out the police in making an arrest at that first rally at Terry Shrunk prior, which was a mind-blowing thing, apparently actually took the handcuffs off the police and gave it to him. I mean, can you imagine? A left winger or a person of color doing that, what would have happened? Strange goings on. So at this rally, the three percenters, I think, actually sort of acted as a buffer between the two sides, which is kind of what they say that they're out to do. So I'm going even further afield. But anyway, I got to talk to some of these alt-righters. As I said, they're kind of scary people to me. A lot of people were just seemed to be somewhat confused, were just there to be part of it. But there seems to be somewhat of a cohesive scene. I talk to people and they seem to feel like there's a actual, there's some coherence to that alt-right movement as it exists here in the Northwest. They seem to, a lot of them seem to know each other. So I talked to them and a lot, some of the things that really stood out to me was this idea that the past is the past and that we have to really work towards a new tomorrow, basically, which is code words for that, you know, racism did exist, slavery did exist, we did treat the Native Americans badly, all this bad stuff did happen, but that was then, and now is now, and we all have to kind of get along, but it would be better if we do it separately. And the other thing is, there's a too big a federal government. We need to shrink the federal government. There's a lot of people call themselves libertarians there, which again I think is a code word for we can't help people in need, and we can't really remedy the problems created by the colonial invasion of this continent and slavery and patriarchy. We just have to shrink the government and let the chips fall where they may. That's my interpretation. Maybe that's an uncharitable interpretation of where the alt-right is at. But I could just keep talking, and I don't think you really want that to happen. So I don't know, will Trump last? Will humanity go extinct? Which will come first? So those are a lot of things to talk about, from the microcosm to the macrocosm, as it were. And 503-231-8187. What do you want to talk about? It's kind of an open time. I haven't really opened it up for quite a long time. Often sort of becomes more of an open discussion when I bring a theme into it. Here's another thing, the Pingo Evidence, Global Warming is a Threat to Humanity by Robert Hunziker, just from a week ago. Pingos may sound cute, but they are not cute, even though they start out as small, kind of cute mounds of earth. Rather, they are monsters from the depths. Whether pingos are threatening is a stimulating question that scientists are still trying to figure out. Pingos are suddenly popping up in the darndest places. Pingos are one more solid piece of evidence that global warming is a real threat to humanity. Global warming is quintessentially a part of the Great Acceleration. Is the world ready? Already, Russian scientists, there go the Russians again, have identified 7,000 alternative pingos in Siberia. According to the Washington Post, Russian scientists find 7,000 Siberian hills possibly filled with explosive gas. From March 27, 2017, Vladimir E. Romanovsky, geophysicist at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, claims, "This is really a new thing to permafrost science. It has not been reported in the literature before." He estimates there could be as many as 100,000 alternative pingos, smaller than regular pingos, across the entire Arctic permafrost. So what are these things, these pingos? Scientists have little doubt that human-caused global warming is a culprit behind their sudden eruptions. What else could possibly account for the extreme rapid melting of permafrost? Is definitely related to warming, Romanovsky said. If these solid chunks warm up and decompose, and the Arctic region is heating up at a rate double the rest of the planet, the methane gas within these hills, there's basically these kind of hills, not really hills, sort of like cysts. There you go. They're kind of like cysts on the planet that contain methane and other gases underneath. The National Academy of Sciences carried an article about these pingos. post-glacial response of Arctic Ocean gas hydrates to climate amelioration, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The reference National Academy article upon conversion into plain English reads as follows: massive underwater domes of methane look set to blow at any moment. Science Alert, June 6, 2017. Methane looks set to blow at any moment is a powerful sounding statement. The ultimate risk factor, only guessing because it is too early to know for sure, is obliteration of global agriculture. Then people starve, get angry, and fight viciously. But first they migrate. No surprise there, as migration has already started in the Middle East and along the southern coastline of the Mediterranean. Okay, that's an article by Robert Hunsaker about these gaseous accumulations creating what I just called cysts or pingos that are breaking out massively in Siberia. I don't know about North America yet. It'd be interesting to know. But apparently we got a caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Paul. I'm driving to my job as a social worker for foster youth that are every day being screwed by many systems of bureaucracy and punishment as our society goes. So I've heard you, and I felt like the topics are big, but, you know, Trump is just the 50 years of neoliberalism. He's a carnival. America is a carnival. I'm really concerned about climate change. Those people like Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, Ortega, who's a multi-billionaire. All the billionaires, the top 10, are the, I guess, the grease that helps our society fall closer and closer to, you know, monopolies and fascism. So I think Trump is just sort of the clown that is the court jester. You know, Peter Thiel, who owns PayPal, who also was involved in the CIA, he was part of the transition team. And I don't know if you've seen the film yet, Nobody Speaks, the Gawker Hulk Hogan documentary, My Roots of Journalism. It's an amazing piece how Mr. Thiel, a multi-billionaire, PayPal, Silicon Valley, went ahead and helped Hulk Hogan's case against Gawker, which a jury gave...
Oh, yeah. I did read that a while back, yeah.
Yeah, $231 million that freak got, Mr. Hulk Hogan, and it killed Gawker. And basically, if you see the film, it shows that it's one of the most telling cases in free speech, that even though a lot of people can't stomach Gawker, it was Peter Thiel behind getting Gawker bankrupt and adios Gawker. And his attitude and others in that billionaire class, I'm much more afraid of them than climate change, is that they want to get rid of any kind of speech, any kind of criticism. It's like Adelson buying the Las Vegas paper, and he bought that paper because he does not want to be criticized for his casino mafiosa dealings that he has in Vegas. And that's the scary thing. So climate change, you know, EnviroGs, those are just sort of the offshoots of our billionaire class that we continue to allow to evade taxes. We're not in their faces. We're not throwing Molotovs at their 17,000 square foot homes. We're in the streets, in this carnival, this so-called two sides of a coin, while the police, which have always been fascist, and I've been a police reporter, believe me, I understand that there's a few good apples, but they're mostly bad apples, you know, that I really are.
It's the institution itself, yeah.
Yeah, as liberals, or I'm a leftist, Marxist, communist, you know, we need to start using language much more effectively and not backing down. And Paul, I know that maybe those Samoans and those big guys are scary, but some people like me, I've been a teacher in prisons. I'm not afraid of the big guys, you know, I mean.
Let me just correct this. It's not those Samoans. I in fact, I kind of shouldn't really even mention that he's Samoan. It really has nothing to do with it. It's one dude. I mean, I was just basically critical of him sort of using his traditional war dance there to be sort of this ridiculous spectacle, sort of to be the sort of a plaything of these alt-righters, right? I just found disgusting. But I probably should just leave that out. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and it's a way to confuse things, because obviously we want Samoa to have independence. It's yet another pimple on, you know, the American imperial project. There are people in Hawaii that are going back to their traditional roots, but then there are other Hawaiians who want, you know, America, you know, on steroids. Same with Puerto Rico. There's an independence movement there, but there are a lot of people in Puerto Rico that want the U.S. and the welfare state or whatever semblance is left there. That's how these billionaires play. You know, they own the media. It's called the control opposition. They, you know, Mr. Soros, he funds some pretty wimpy organizations. We're all on Russia, as if we haven't interfered with elections since day one in this country. I mean, Russia didn't hack the elections. If Russia gave the emails out, how did that change anything? We've been doing voter suppression for every damn election possible. Mr. Gore gave up like the wimp he was. It's not the Russians. It's the American people that are in this carnival spectacle. You know, we know who talks about the spectacle, the man who, they're a pretty good writer, but he's against the black box, block, you know, that Chris Hedges. I mean, I love Chris, but he's also one of the pacifiers, one of the people that says young people don't get a Molotov, don't blow up that Hummer, don't be active, just sort of come together. And
man, you're as all over the place as I am.
I know. You got me going. I mean, I was listening to you going, how am I going to focus my response? But this is the Paul moment, so I apologize for not being focused.
All right, let's hope we've stimulated some other people to join the conversation.
Sorry about that, man.
No. It's all good. I like it. I like the free form. 503-231-8187. Thank you, Paul, for chiming in. And hope you call back again another show. 503-231-8187. Brought up a lot of stuff there. You know, I don't know. What do you think about this Russia stuff? I think it is kind of fascinating that the these methane cysts are showing up in Siberia, and there's these Russian scientists that are kind of on the forefront of studying them. And meanwhile, we've got this Russiagate. I don't know. It's a pretty big thing. But so is it the billionaire class or climate change that scares you most, and how are they related? Well, you know, I mean, some of these billionaires are actually talking about geoengineering, and some other ones are talking about, like Elon Musk, of talking about colonizing Mars, and many of them seem to be buying up their own refuges from climate change. They seem to have these fantastic plans for themselves to survive the catastrophe. Meanwhile, the rest of us, especially poor people living in, especially in the tropics, marginalized communities that have already suffered the brunt of neoliberal capitalism and now got the double and triple whammy of climate change, they're not able to do that. Looks like we got another call. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
I just had a call. I mean, I was just calling in.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I was going to talk about Elizabeth Warren and Dodd-Frank.
Uh-huh.
So is this Mr. Roland?
That's me.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it's like I'm hearing how everyone's kind of worried about a number of political issues and society's problems, and Elizabeth Warren was trying to go to bat for all of America with Dodd-Frank, and that's the financial choice. I think it's called the Financial Choice Act, and it's going to have a significant impact on capitalism because it's basically overturning Mr. Obama's Dodd-Frank, and that actually does play out in places like Africa because it impacts the Congo. We had Section 1502, I think it is, or 1504, which had to do for I don't know if you're studying the Congo. I mean, people may not be studying that. That's reasonable. They basically have Holocaust death counts in the Congo. 6 million people have died in the mineral conflicts. If you like to turn on your lights today or use your laptop computer, some of those things like tungsten and cobalt come from the Congo.
So what about Dodd-Frank?
And Dodd-Frank being repealed, it's going to impact the Congo because this section was... there's a thing about Dodd-Frank, you know, it's basically, Elizabeth Warren called it a big wet kiss to Wall Street. So basically, it's basically like, you know, boys, go to town, like, it's all yours.
So I understand. So in the current political situation, what chance is there of actually restoring it?
You know, I don't know what the chances are, but I do think that to a certain extent, what I hear, I don't know. I actually don't know what would be restored or how you would get political traction to put something new in. I do think the internet can be one of the places where we politically resolve our issues much more productively. To me, the internet can be more abusive than shock jerk radio, quite frankly.
Speaking of the internet, it seems like today there's a big push to restore net neutrality. I think the Google and isn't it today? Is that right, Liam? Yeah, I believe that's today. There's some all these big internet companies are joining forces to ask for comments because, you know, speaking of the internet, if they destroy net neutrality, then we no longer even have that vehicle. So.
Yes, it is a big deal. And I mean, you know, I called in to say that the world is pretty globalized and I used to do the Sacred Run with Ames. So, I mean, in Sacred Run, it's actually a relay race. So it's a prayer. It's a group effort. You're not throwing punches at each other. And I do think that people maybe should take a cue and realize that we all live here together. But it's hard because when you look at, like, going back to the Congo, you know, the United States actually did back a dictator there. And
I think
let me finish because They are the Dubai of copper. And they are the poorest country on earth. And they are worth $24 trillion worth of stuff and goodies is under their soil. And it's not going to white people. It's actually going to China, and then China sells guns and ammo back to Africa, and bullets are made of copper and zinc. And you know what? Tokyo actually makes their level 7 buildings. They're planning.
Okay, we're going a little far afield here, so we're going to have to go to our next caller. Thank you so much. I know when I open things up, it does tend to go wide, but let's try to keep our thoughts a little more focused if we could. And I thank you for calling in. Let's go to Ted.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I appreciate what the previous caller was saying. It's very serious stuff. It is kind of strange when you open it up, things move around. And I like your show, Paul. It's always very thoughtful. What's on my mind today is... I'd like to appeal somehow to the KBOO community to somehow find a political direction that makes sense for the next election cycle coming up in the United States. I feel lost by the Democrats. There's always this kind of feeling that it's either the Democrats or nobody. You know, if you support the Greens or someone, you're wasting your vote. But these Democrats are so lame. I hear Chuck Schumer in February saying something like, the message from this disastrous election is we have to tweak our message for rural voters. To me, that is hugely missing the point, the message of this election.
Well, let me just break in and pick up on that one thought. So, political direction, as you know, as a station, according to our guidelines, as a nonprofit corporation, we can't obviously take political positions. But something I've thought a lot about is, we do need more sort of coherence. And how can KBOO, what is the role of KBOO, and how can KBOO within our limits in terms of, not being able to formally endorse or, be a political force in that way? That's an interesting question. Want to say more about that?
Yes, I kind of forgotten about that restriction that you can't endorse the party or something like that. But somehow what I'm mumbling about, and let me just finish. I mentioned the Schumer in February, but just the other night, two nights ago, I heard on the NewsHour, the PBS NewsHour, that Democrats were starting to think about the next election, and they had a woman on there high in the Democratic Party, and she's mouthing the same kind of thing that, they need to tweak their message slightly. They almost won last time. I mean, we need some strong position. Everybody wants single payer. We need to, get some party. We need a different party. We need a new party is what I'm thinking. I think Bernie Sanders is saying this a little bit, that the Democrats are just not going to do anything in the next election cycle either. Are they going to run Hillary Clinton again? I mean, I don't know. I don't trust them anymore. And so I don't know. You're right. Maybe KBOO can't participate, but in the general political system right now, I don't see a party emerging that we can get behind. I think it's time to start building something like Pick the Greens, or somehow a discussion, a new party, or take over the Democratic Party from below, if that's possible. I'd like to hear a little discussion about people who know, is that possible? Can we get in the Democratic Party, throw out the Clintons and the top leadership, and take it over so we have its name to fight for single payer or something that actually means something to people? I may be all over the map.
Well, that seems to be the nature of the show this morning, so it's right in infinity. Yeah, well, let's throw that out. 503-231-8187. That's one discussion. How what role can KBOO play? What is the best political approach to the current situation? I think the previous caller did get at that with the discussion on Dodd-Frank. So thank you for calling in.
All right, thank you. Bye.
And I just have a brief station announcement before we go to our next caller. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, On the Ground Radio says No New War, with voices of Koreans, Korean Americans, and anti-war activists who are calling for a final end to the decades-old Korean War. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints, as always, with Dennis Bernstein out of KPFA in Berkeley. At 11, The Dirtbag looks at ways to conserve soil moisture. That's something that I've been thinking a lot about with my garden. Summer pruning and grafting during the dry season. And of course, thank all of you KBOO members for your generous support. And of course, thank everybody who's listening for listening. And if you're listening and you're not a KBOO member, you can so easily become one. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate. And of course, kboo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio is how you can re-listen to this whole show, should you want to. And check out all the other programs that I've done in the last several 2-3 years, or God, maybe even more, that I've been doing this show. So that's that. And let's go to our next caller, which is Harvey. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Paul. Well, because everything's so serious, I'd like to insert a bit of environmental humor into it.
Okay.
That's okay with you. Well, I believe I know why the Trump administration is so fossil fuel friendly, and that's because Trump and his administration, they're Venusians. They're from the planet Venus. And what happened was, that they had a runaway greenhouse effect on Venus, which was supposed to, our scientists tell us, it was similar to Earth. There was water, the temperatures were cooler, and there was a runaway greenhouse effect, which raised the planet's temperature to hundreds of degrees, where lead flows like water, and the oceans boiled off. So the Venusians had to make a jump to Earth. But Earth was too cool for them, so they enlisted the human race to carbonize the atmosphere and heat it up for them, and that's why we can't seem to get off the coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear. And but now, unfortunately,
and this is getting too warm, is a joke.
So we're going to have to make the jump to Mars and terraform the planet, heat Mars up, which is going to put a lot of pressure on the Martians. So essentially, it's a very sad story that what the Venusians did to us, we're going to have to do to the Martians. And so it's important that we all take personal responsibility here to cool our planet, and by going renewable and like buying electric cars and plugging them into our solar electric rooftops, if we want to save our home planet for us and our.
But isn't that just supporting Elon Musk and his project to go back to Mars?
Yeah, well, you know, this seems to be the trend, and I don't know, it sounds funny, but that's you know, because you're wondering why would the president work so hard to keep fossil fuels going when we know that, you know, all these disasters are taking place, that, you know, the losses in the monetary losses to all of us, to insurance companies, to everything, is just, and it's just going to get worse and worse and worse as the planet heats up. So why are they so fossil fuel friendly? The only reason I can come up with is that they're Venusians.
And well, you know, actually, it's I think there's a way to bring all this stuff together, because I haven't really said this much, but the thing that I credit most, the thing that I seems to be most likely about Trump is that he really is so deeply in debt, including to like Russian mafioso types, that he had to run for president. I mean, this crazy sort of long shot thing. And in doing so, the people that he had to ally with were these oligarchs and the fossil fuel. So it's this, you know, it's this this terrible confluence of forces between this bizarre you know, kind of sordid, disgusting, rich kid billionaire who didn't really know how to be an actual capitalist, which obviously many don't, because, you know, he just was so immature, and so he totally burned so many bridges. This is his last, you know, the reality show was sort of the stepping stone to the presidency, and he had to make alliances with the worst forces on the planet, meaning the fossil fuel industry and, you know, the retrograde white supremacists. And it's a terrible situation, and I agree with you. You've called in over the months, and I always appreciate your plugging, you know, a hopeful vision, which is I agree with you that renewable energy has to be a big part of it. I guess I disagree a little bit in that I think there's certain illusions around the idea that renewables will save us. I mean, we have to have a complete coming off of a growth-oriented economy as part of that.
I have a new idea for a renewable. You know what piezoelectricity is? That's pressure to electricity. When you take like quartz crystals and you apply pressure, electrons break free and they run a circuit. So it's another way to generate electricity. Well, they have these things called bladeless windmills, which are these shafts, these that go up into the sky, and as the wind pushes them around, these poles that they generate electricity. So I'm thinking they can put these piezoelectric poles on boats and for masts, and create as the sail pushes the pole around, it could create electricity. But also, it turns out that huge buildings like in big cities, if they sway in the wind. So if they use piezoelectric material in the building and construction of them, these would create giant generators of electricity, especially cities like New York, Chicago. So the wind could create electricity with piezoelectric buildings, high rises, and all that.
No, I mean, I think the inherent creativity of the human species, we've certainly demonstrated abundantly that we have this amazing, inventive, creative energy. Unfortunately, we've sort of, because of the nature of the capitalist system, it's been channeled into these directions that are end up being terribly harmful to life on the planet. And but there's no reason why we couldn't unleash all those same creative energies into positive directions, like you rightfully point out. The problem I see is that we're still going in the wrong direction, and that I don't see enough concerted focus on some sort of like bringing together the anti-capitalist framework with the sort of the vision that you bring out, which I think comes out of sort of the appropriate technology sort of movement of the 70s. I just don't see us coming together in the ways that are necessary where we can have this kind of common vision that people are talking about, the sort of World War II style mobilization to stop climate disruption. I just don't see people really able to come together in the ways that are necessary, but I see the vision as being a good one.
Maybe you could start at the street level. Another way to use piezoelectricity is for bicycle spokes. So as the wheel goes round, the wind goes through the bicycle spokes and shake, you know, and the piezoelectric material throws off electrons to power the the electric hub motor at the center of the wheel. And maybe if it's at street level where people are seeing it in action as they roll around on their bicycles, that it could create bigger thoughts and more move toward renewables. It could be applied in any direction where pressure to electricity, piezo, P-I-E-Z-O, electric. And I say, let's tap into our collective creativity and get this happening.
Okay. Well, thank you, Harvey, as always. I think that's a wonderful vision. I tend more towards the need to actually confront the contradictions of our racist and colonial past, because the past is not just the past. But anyway, let's go to our next caller. Jane, you're on the air. Hello? Jane? Somebody?
Hello?
Yeah?
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
The couple callers ago about like what role KBOO could play in trying to kind of organize people, and this has really been on my mind a lot since the election, and it's kind of a topic in general that I've been thinking about a lot over the past few years, you know, and contrasting the right versus the left. The right has been very successful, and the people who support that kind of put aside a lot of their differences just to kind of get basically somebody who's taking things in a direction they like. And I feel like the left has been very fragmented and with people, and they're kind of like they're the one issue that they really want to see change in. And it's kind of left the left side more fragmented. And I see a real need for people who want to see progress, progressives in the left, to solidify and try to become like a united front, kind of like the right has. And I think like what party's going to do that? I don't know, the Democrats, I feel like the Democrats have, the right is trying to take things backwards, and the Democrats have become like the status quo. And I think what the left needs is a party that wants to see progress and direction and change. And so I have to say, I'll just listen to your response off the air. I got to get going. Thank you for taking my call.
you're handing off a big one to me. I was hoping you were going to give us some good ideas. Why me? Gosh, I don't know. That's what's KBOO's role and how to develop a united front all in one fell swoop. I think as far as KBOO goes, I think we need to have our own, develop our own political culture way more than we do. You know, this kind of inside stuff. I don't think we have our own political conversations and confront our own contradictions from the liberal to the radical to the whatever end of the spectrum that are always avoided amongst you know, generally within the left, that's avoided, which created the Sanders Clinton split and the Clinton suppression, the Clinton centered Democratic Party suppression of the Sanders insurgency, and you know, helped lead to the, you know, I think the Trump presidency. Is that overly simplistic? You know, can we lay it all at the neoliberal Dems' feet? If we're going to have a united front, you know, it always combines the liberal and the radical factions, you know, the united front or the popular front or whatever, against fascism, did include various elements. In Italy, where my father grew up, where he was involved in the Action Party, they were kind of the liberal democratic, non-communist, non-socialist wing of the resistance, but they had their own armed resistance formations. And my dad wasn't part of that. He was really young and more part of the sort of the information wing. But yeah, you know, united fronts have to, if not confront the contradictions, at least put them aside and come to some sort of common agreements, as people were talking about in the rise of the so-called anti-globalization movement, when, you know, the first black blockers came on the scene, and there's a lot of conflicts between the black bloc and the more liberal institutional forces, and they were forced to come to sort of common agreements in the street movement that was developing, and they did, and we need to get back to that, to some actually forums where we actually come together and discuss our differences and either lay them aside, either get into them deeply and work through them, or temporarily lay them aside. And I don't see that much happening. We need to do that at all levels, from wherever we are, from within KBOO, whenever we have these street demonstrations and the planning for them. That's my take on that. Let's go to our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Are you asking for me?
Yeah, it's you.
Okay. Yeah, I joined this conversation really late. I've been out working. I just came in for a minute, caught the tail end of it, and I kind of picked up on that we were talking about how the left or the progressives can get mobilized. Am mm-hmm. I picking up
yeah,
on
yeah,
that correctly?
That's one strand. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. You know, my wife and I run a small farm, and we have for years now, and it's been our activism. It's what we do because we believe that, you know, it starts with food or air and water also. And we noticed that so many people that are into the idea of what we do, sustainable agriculture, are have a certain sort of idealistic ideas about what it's about. And when they get to the farm, where it's mostly day-to-day hard work just trying to make the thing run, it loses some of its luster. And so we've also noticed that out here in the country, a lot of our neighbors who are very conservative are pretty pragmatic and get down to business and can be very helpful when you really need somebody to do something. So I've kind of noticed this tendency of the progressives to be, which I am one of them, to be very starry-eyed and kind of in their heads. And then when it comes down to really working hard, that's sometimes they shy away from it. So I don't know. I don't know how to encourage us to make that better, to make people more knowing that they have to get on the ground. It's kind of like the politics. When it comes down to really organizing and doing the work, well, people shy away once it leaves the realm of the head. You know what I mean?
Well, a lot of people are also, you know, are focus a lot of that energy on their, you know, the work that they have to do to keep themselves afloat in this financial system. So may not.
That's interesting too, though. A lot of the people that we have working shy away from putting in extra hours or doing the extra work that it has to be done to make a farm run, for example. So I don't know. It just seems to be somehow there's just a disconnect there. And so I'm just telling you my point of view and
okay.
thinking that it might contribute.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate
that.
We are winding down. We got a couple minutes left. I don't know if we have any more callers. We don't. So, yeah, I mean, I've brought up a lot of things, talking about the calving of the Larsen C ice shelf, now a Delaware-sized iceberg there in the Southern Oceans, about these methane pingos, kind of methane cysts growing in the thousands upon thousands in Siberia, exploding or ready to explode. I had talked earlier other shows about the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, which has massive amounts of methane ready to blow. I mean, these things are happening in real time, folks, and we have less and less time at our disposal, and things seem to be moving to some extent in the opposite direction. But hey, maybe this Trump presidency is like its own sort of cyst that's just going to explode, and this is our opportunity to really seize the day and redouble our efforts to work together to fight the billionaire class, the capitalist system, and head off imminent global warming disaster. Well, I'm going to put a bunch of links to the various articles so you can do your own research. We only have 30 seconds left, so I got to get out of here. Thanks so much for listening. This is Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Oh, I'm going to be on the Beloved Community this Friday. Don Schuck interviewed me, so you can get a deeper look into my strange mind. So thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Report from Kabul speech by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. Zahair Wahab, a native of Afghanistan and director of graduate studies at the American University of Afghanistan, will present a critical analysis of the Afghani political, military, economic, and cultural situation. Again, that's Report from Kabul by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO, Community Radio, and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 37th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 14th, 15th, and 16th at Cathedral Park in North Portland. KBOO will be broadcasting live on Saturday beginning at 2 p.m. with the Bylines Quartet starting at 2:30. Again, that's the 37th Annual Cathedral Park.